Welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on this blustery Monday morning. It is the 12th day of November, and the year is 2018, and it is, snowing a little bit, and it's windy, so it's cold. Welcome to another week. This one in November time really flies. Things happening now. Of course, they've been advertising Christmas before Halloween. And I don't know, for some reason, I don't like that. I don't like to hear the traditional music behind the commercials. Yeah, that's a different story. We'll get to some other day. Right now, what we're going to do is concentrate on the individual seated in the hot seat. And this is the second or third or fourth time my guest has joined me. Here are your earphones. You can put those on and hear that great music in the background. Can you name that tune? Does it sound familiar?
Yes, it does.
All right.
I hear it whenever I hear you.
Yeah.
It goes off in my head automatically.
It's Dwayne Eddy, and it's called Rebel Rouser.
Hitting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. 3 minutes after 9 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. And don't forget, today is 15 with the author. I'll tell you more about that a little bit later on. Terry Knight does a great job on that. As a matter of fact, our guest has a book that she's going to be talking about this morning. Paul Bowmaster is my guest. Did I say your name right?
Yes, you did.
Okay, because do some people say Meister, Paul Bowmaster?
Yes, they do. And actually, when my relatives were fleeing Europe, they had to change it to Baumeister.
Baumeister.
And then when they got back here to the U.S., they changed it back to Bowmaster.
What's the difference between Bow and Bow?
Depends on who was occupying the area they lived.
Are you talking about Germany?
In France.
In France.
If the French were occupying it, they were Bowmasters. If the Prussians were occupying it, they were Baumeisters.
Oh, okay. So there must be in French, there must be a difference between bow and bow. Evidently, I would assume. Yeah. Anyhow, Paul, thank you for coming in. We planned on having you join me almost a year ago, and the dates had to keep flipping because you're a very busy man. And today, the federal and state government offices are closed. And I was wondering when last August, I think it might have been when we talked, that, why would he push it so far ahead to November 12th? And I get it.
One day I knew I wouldn't be in court.
Right. And this is what I want to talk about today. Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Bowmaster was our attorney, Rice County, what's the official name?
Rice County Attorney.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay, Rice County Attorney.
Nothing glorious.
An office now held by John... Your buddy John.
Oh, Fossum.
But John Fossum. And you ended up in Dakota County, which is a little bit different than Rice County in regards to how many judges and how many times you go before the judge and defend or prosecute. And one of the first things I wanted to know is, what is the difference in, like, numbers or time or attorneys, judges, and all that? Because, you know, you don't go to just Hastings. You go to, don't they have one?
They have an Apple Valley courthouse. Yeah. They also have a West St. Paul courthouse.
Yeah, isn't that that's a huge county.
It is the third largest, and coming up on Ramsey for the second year, I think, soon.
Yeah, and then
it's growing rapidly.
You know, St. Louis is the biggest county, isn't it?
Landmass-wise, yes.
Yeah.
Hennepin, population-wise, is the largest county. Okay. Ramsey second, and Dakota is third. Landmass, Dakota's larger than those other two ahead of it. So statistically, as it keeps growing, it will eventually overtake one or both.
When it comes to being busy, what was it like for not only your office, but also for the prosecuting attorneys that you were their boss, and then moving to Dakota County where, what's his name, is the big boss?
James Beckstrom.
Beckstrom, yes. Guy that does Elvis Presley.
Yes, he does. He really has a great voice.
Yeah. So what is the difference that we citizens could comprehend and appreciate?
Well, part of Northfield is actually in Dakota County, and we have obviously crime that occurs in the northern part of the city in Dakota County. So, I mean, they would be at times going to Hastings rather than Faribault. It's not that much farther, but it's straight up 47. Can't miss it. Difference-wise, as far as the population goes, it's probably about 10 times larger than Rice County. The number of judges, obviously, are a lot greater. I'm not even certain. We just had a boatload of new judges come on board in Dakota County with retirements and appointments. So I don't know what the exact number is. I know here in Rice County, I think there's still only three judges, and they've been at three since the 70s, I think, with Bernie, Bill Johnson, and Jerry Wolf.
Yeah.
Those three had been there most of my tenure.
Okay.
And I think they had been there since the 70s, early 80s.
You know, what was nice about the three judges you just mentioned is the difference between them.
Very different people.
Yeah, and I have to say Bernie is a good friend of mine, known him forever, and Johnson, the same thing. But Jerry Wolf, I have to say, I thought he was a very good judge. I really think this guy was, if you're guilty, here's what's going to happen. And if he sees a little BS going on, he can see through it. And I would imagine working with those three judges was almost a pleasure.
Yeah, well, the nice part about a small courthouse is you get to know the personalities and their judicial philosophies and kind of can tailor your case to them if they have it. So that's kind of nice. Whereas in Dakota, it's hard to get to know any judge's philosophy or how they rule very well, other than you talk to other people who say, you know, what are they like? What are their preferences? Those are things you kind of learn every day in Dakota County as you appear before a new judge that you hadn't seen before. So that's kind of different, that you have such a volume of judges that you work through. And there's a few that you see for, they rotate on the juvenile calendars, and so you may see a judge for a couple months and then not see him again or her again for a year or two.
Have you ever wanted to be a judge?
I have, on occasions put in to be one. I don't know that I, at this point in my career, I would.
Yeah. Well, once you get a judgeship, it generally lasts for a lifetime, doesn't it?
I mean, they run for election.
I know they go for election, but the incumbent usually wins because nobody knows who anybody is, but they may recognize the name because of the past. Yeah,
and that's true. And in the larger jurisdictions, obviously.
Is that a more time-consuming and a difficult job between a judge and a prosecutor?
Well, I was a judicial law clerk, and I would say there's less take-home work.
Yeah. Okay.
As a prosecutor, I know I would be bringing home work almost at a daily basis.
You know that the television shows about lawyers and courts and all that are, you know, not exactly the way it goes, but sometimes it might be the way it goes. Now, the whole idea of a prosecutor is to prosecute a criminal that came in by way of a police force or a sheriff's department. And is it true, like you see on TV, that you'll look at the case and you say, nope, you don't have enough evidence, and then the cops get mad at you, and then they go out and find more evidence, and nope, everything looks good here, but you don't have any DNA or whatever. It's tough on a prosecutor, isn't it?
I've never found that a tough job to make a call one way or the other. Usually you work closely with the officers. That's a little different, too, in Dakota County. There are so many different police departments that it's hard to have, you know, a close relationship with all the law enforcement. I've worked with the Drug Task Force in Dakota County, though, for the last couple of years, and that's a little smaller force. I think there's 25 agents on that force, so you can get to know them a little better. But you talk through cases, and every time there's a referral made to you, obviously the police officer or the investigator believes there's a case there that should be prosecuted. You review it and hopefully have a discussion with them about why you are or aren't charging it, or if you need follow-up investigation. Those are, as far as I'm concerned, pretty easy conversations. They're educational for both the prosecutor and for the law enforcement officer when you have those discussions. It's not just a, no, I'm not going to charge it, go away. Here's what I find lacking, or here's what I think we need to do for follow-up investigation, or can you explain how this worked? I think in my 30-plus years, I don't think I've ever had an officer, you know, storm off not knowing why his case wasn't being prosecuted. They may not agree with it, which, you know, with any two individuals talking about something, they can always have a disagreement. But hopefully there's an understanding from each side as to why their position is what it is.
Paul Bowmaster is my guest here on the Wayne Indy Affair. He is was a Dakota County prosecutor. You just got moved over to a new department, didn't you?
Transitioning.
Transitioning, that's the word, okay.
In a professional sense, other sense.
what department are you going into?
The Civil Division.
And
I'll still be working with the Drug Task Force, but forfeitures and things.
How does a prosecutor get into the civil division when it's all about people suing one another with a judge and a jury there? Why would a prosecutor have a role in that?
Well, I also had a civil calendar when I was in Rice County, and both before that in Isani County. So I've had experience doing the civil aspect of the job as well.
But what does a prosecutor do when it's not a crime? It's a civil case. Why would you need a prosecutor?
You don't.
Yeah. So what is your job then?
I do the civil side for the county. The county's a corporation, so it has many corporate council type activities, same as any other business, as you would know. doing contracts, giving legal advice on a day to day basis.
Okay. Would you be then involved in a lawsuit against the county?
Yeah, the county does a lot of licensing work where we get sued if we don't give someone a license, or if we penalize them or fine them for a license violation, illegal dumping, you name it. There's a lot of civil activity that the county does, particularly a larger county like Dakota.
Well, speaking about Dakota County, I've been there.
You have?
I've been in the courtroom at, and I have no idea. But let me tell you the circumstance. It's 9:16, by the way, and Paul Bowmaster is my guest. He is an attorney working for the county of Dakota. So here I am. Do you remember when Highway 3 was going through a big change north of town? Okay, they were putting in you couldn't drive through there. You had to do something or other. I'd have to go out 19 to get to the radio station. But I always checked on it early in the morning, 5:30, so I could let people know that, hey, you can go through on 3 now. So I'm going through it, and there's bumpy dirt, blacktop, and I end up pulling into a Northfield Tractor and Equipment. And as I'm getting in there, I'm turning around to go over to Highway 19, and a Dakota County cop stopped me. You know, I suppose a guy driving around Northfield Tractor and Equipment at 5 in the morning looked suspicious, and I don't blame him. But when he got in, we were both now in the parking lot, and evidently he wasn't a happy person, and he was kind of in your face, and he gave me a ticket for not having on his seatbelt. And I had driven into the parking lot. I saw him coming, and I thought, oh, he's going to want my license. So I took my seatbelt off. And then he wanted to know what I was doing, and I told him I was checking it out and blah, blah, blah. And you're not wearing a seatbelt. I said, yeah, I had a seatbelt on, but I took it off so I could show you this license. No, he gave me the ticket. Okay, so now, being me, what is a fine for no seatbelt? $25?
Yeah, something like that. I think you pay more in a surcharge. I think there's an $80 surcharge and a $25 fine.
Oh, so, okay. Anyhow, I knew it was going to cost me.
That's the legislature for you.
Well, I took my checkbook with me, and I went up to Dakota County, and I never got before a judge. I sat at a desk talking to some lady, and she was writing down information. And then she waived the fine for the seatbelt, but charged me for the court. Does that sound right?
Yeah, they could have charged you the legislative surcharge.
Yeah, and I'm
that's non-waivable. The legislature won't let the courts waive that.
Yeah, so I'm going, wait a minute. I didn't get a ticket. You agree with me, and now I have to pay some money? That isn't right. Well, I shut up and signed the check and got out of there. But the thing that impressed me was how busy they were. Holy cow. I couldn't believe the number of people that were in there, and they're just churning them. And my question now, do they try to solve some minimal thing before they waste time in a court with a judge?
I think use of diversion programs are popular in even rural counties, but I think you note it more in the metropolitan counties, just the volume. You try to take off as many cases as you can through a diversion process that holds the person accountable, but still doesn't clog up the court system with, a seatbelt violation, if it can be resolved short of that. If it can't, obviously we have the court system to use.
Now, have you ever heard of a trial by judge in his office?
No.
Or in her office?
No.
Okay.
There's supposed to be an open court. Mm-hmm. Constitutionally guaranteed to public trial.
So no exceptions.
There was just a recent case handed down by the Eighth Circuit that made it pretty clear there's no exceptions.
But it has happened.
Not that it's gone up on appeal. It may have happened, but then everybody was happy with the result, so
okay.
No appeal.
Okay. Do you do a lot of ride-alongs?
No. No. I used to when I was younger, first starting out.
Down in Faribault?
No, actually up in Isanti.
Isanti County, yeah. Okay. Did you find that kind of interesting and exciting, being a cop?
No, not really. It's a lot of long hours of nothing.
I did a ride-along with Dakota County Sheriff, Mr. Penny. I don't know if you know him. He's retired, but, they got permission and all that. And that's a big county, and there were places I didn't even know existed, like the place that has, I can't even tell you the name of it, but it has little buildings all over the place, and they have weddings there,
Bowers Farm?
Is that a big complex of...
Yeah, he has taken a lot of old buildings, the old Spiral Bridge and things like that, and put them out on his farm,
yeah.
And he has weddings, and he took the old... Catholic Church out of Hastings and rebuilt it on his property, used the rafters to actually make his convention center. It's quite the place.
How do you know all that stuff?
I get around.
Okay. All right. Well, I got around with the officer.
I had a case involving that. So.
Okay. You had what?
A case that involved one of the buildings out there.
But, on the civil side?
No.
Criminal
somebody
side. Broke in, huh? Through window, through rocks or something?
What happened? One of the buildings was an old crime scene.
We can't, everything is public, right?
Right.
So you can say anything you want unless you want to redact their names or whatever.
Yeah, this was a criminal sexual misconduct case, so I don't really want to talk about the person.
It was a what?
A criminal sexual misconduct case
from way back. Okay.
So, but
did you have to prosecute that one?
Yes, I did.
Did you win?
No, I did not.
Okay. Well, what's your percentage of wins?
Well, I don't really keep track of my percentage of wins. I would say I've lost very few.
Okay.
So
you're talking 90% of the time
I would say it's probably higher than that.
Whoa.
Well, considering that probably 2%, 5% of my cases ever go to trial.
That was going to be where I was going to go next on that. But I want to also, at this time, drop in a word for my favorite restaurant in town. Do you know what it is?
Quarterback Club.
How did you know that?
Just a lucky guess. It's one of my favorites, too.
All right. And they're serving breakfast right now. They do till 10 o'clock every day, Monday through Saturday. Sundays they leave open for the nonprofits to have their pancake feeds, etc. And, of course, they have those delicious baby back barbecued ribs with mountains of madness oozing all over them. Oh, they are so good. We're talking about the QB, the Quarterback Club, locally owned, locally managed, the only place in town that has burgers that are flame broiled. And it's, as I said, it's locally owned. So stop in, give them a chance if you've never been there. If you've been there, go again.
Thanksgiving is just around the corner, and the Northfield Knights of Columbus want to make sure your holiday is heavy on the gravy, but light on the pocketbook. Turkey Bingo is back at St. Dominic's Church. Come in for a night of fun with family and friends, and try to win yourself a turkey, or a chicken, or a pork pack, or a beef pack. Turkey Bingo is Friday, with free games starting at 6:30 and bingo at 7. Food and beverages will be available throughout the evening. Get in the spirit of Thanksgiving. Play Turkey Bingo at St. Dominic's Church in Northfield.
Your vehicle's engine warning light could mean something as simple as a loose gas cap or something serious and potentially expensive if you don't address it right away. Have our professional technicians at Witt Brothers Service diagnose and fix the problem as part of your overall preventative maintenance program. It could save you from costly problems down the road. Stop by Witt Brothers Service at 701 Division Street in downtown Northfield for all of your automotive maintenance and repair needs.
We're back, live and in color from our studios in downtown Northfield, Minnesota, right on Division Street, and across from the library, and I see Howard and his red truck out there. Do you know Howard?
Yes, I do.
Who doesn't know Howard?
I don't know. It's hard not to know him.
That guy is such a promoter when it comes to Northfield. Last time I was chit-chatting with Howard from Eco Gardens, we're having a conversation, and these people were kind of wandering around, two kids, mom and dad, and he turns around and says, "Can I help you?" And he asked where something was. "Oh, it's just down around the corner, then you go here." And all of a sudden there was this lengthy conversation and him talking about how great Northfield is, and, you know, at times you got to be here for this and for that. And these out-of-town people were just very grateful to get this. Oh, I didn't know that. Well, the museum's right down. So, anyhow.
But he is bringing Christmas to you early.
Yeah, I noticed that. This is an office complex, so I'm sure a lot of offices are going to have something nice potted plants with Christmas trees in them. He's got the same haircut I have.
He does. It's a good haircut.
Paul Bowmaster is my guest on the Wayne Eddy Affair, and he is a prosecuting attorney in Dakota County right now. He's a former Rice County attorney, and we're talking about different things, and it's his responsibility to remember where we were before we took that break.
Well, we were talking about the Quarterback Club.
Oh.
And Jeff.
Okay.
And that he likes eating there.
Well, I want to know more. We were talking about the fact that you can say anything because it's all on record and anybody can learn it. So you can tell us about cases. Names are unimportant. I just want to know what it is like, you know. So, for example, have you ever prosecuted a murder case?
Yes, I have.
In Rice County or Dakota? Well, you had one in Rice County.
Oh, I have many in Rice County.
Many.
Well, we had probably 10 in my tenure here, over 16 years.
Wow. And then you're the guy that prosecuted the fellow that encouraged suicide.
Yes, Mr. Melker Dinkle.
Yeah, from Faribault.
Yes.
And that was a long case, and the eyes of the world were on you on how this was going to go. The background on it is somebody wanted to commit suicide, and this fellow, who was a nurse, I believe, encouraged him to do it by way of email or
chat rooms. He would go into suicide chat rooms and basically pretend to be somebody who's suicidal and looking for somebody to kill himself with. And he would convince people to commit suicide with him. Of course, he never followed through, but the other person's, his goal was to get them to follow through. He used it as a game. I mean, he basically told the police that he felt it was a game.
Now, was Canada or Australia involved in that case?
Canada and UK. And
UK, okay.
Were the two that we brought. There were others, but there wasn't sufficient evidence to go forward on those cases.
Now, did you get any backlash from people that said, hey, why waste your time on this? It's an international case. But the light shone on Rice County and your position.
Well, not really. I mean, I certainly had people talk to me about the case, but I don't know about backlash.
Well, I mean expense. I mean, it took a lot of time, and I assume a lot of
it really
expense.
Didn't. As far as the time of for the trial and everything wasn't all that lengthy. The time was in all the appeals that occurred. Up and down to the Supreme Court, in which they upheld, pretty sure it was Judge Neville's sentencing that was being appealed, and that was upheld. So I don't know. I don't know, unless you're the victim of the crime, I guess, yeah, you might say it's a waste of taxpayer dollars. If you're the victim of the crime, you're usually complaining we're not spending enough money on your case. So I guess it depends on your perspective on whether a crime should be prosecuted or not.
And what did he end up getting? Do you recall?
I don't recall the exact sentence.
Was it 20 years or at home?
He's on probation. Yeah, probation, he had a long probationary period. I don't remember what the exact amount of time he did in jail or anything.
What other murders in Rice County?
Well, when I got here, we had three that were being prosecuted. They had committed a murder. Rusty Torres was one of the individuals. He's still in prison. He's got life.
How did he murder somebody?
His victim, Springer, was a victim of slashing. He had slashed his throat.
Okay. Were you in the county, were you the county, Rice County attorney when that murder occurred on the exit ramp from Freeway 35 to Dundas?
With John Liebenstein, are you referring to?
No, not. That was
That was Jeff Thompson.
You weren't there. But the other one where the love triangle.
No, that was Jeff Thompson as well. I got here. I did the appeal on that one.
Okay. And how... Appeal.
He appealed. She was acquitted, and he appealed.
She was acquitted?
Yes.
Wow, she had a good lawyer.
I don't know.
Was that a jury trial for her?
Yes.
And she was acquitted. Okay. And he appealed, but what happened there? Were you the prosecutor?
His conviction was upheld.
Oh, okay. How about, unfortunately, the lady in the cornfield? On the west side of 35, just around the border.
I did do that one.
And was that a difficult case, or was it a stupid guy?
That was a difficult case only because of the evidence was circumstantial up until the point where we were able to. It was one of Minnesota's first DNA cases where we used mitochondrial DNA.
Mitochondrial?
That's through his mother's lineage. And fortunately, his mother was from a small, I think it was Philippine island, There were only two people in the state of Minnesota that really would have matched that DNA. One was him, and one was his brother.
And if it wasn't for DNA, he would have got free.
He was free for... Jeff Thompson had dismissed the case against him after some evidence had been suppressed back in, I'm not going to remember the exact dates, but the early 90s. And then I reopened and prosecuted the case early 2000s.
Well, Paul, I'll tell you what, I was proud of Rice County because this guy was from the Twin Cities. And, you know, how are you going to find a person in the Twin Cities who dumps a body in rural Rice County? And at that time, it's dark, and he gets away. Nobody has a car. There are no witnesses. There's nothing. And you got this DNA. Is it real expensive to process DNA?
At that time, it was. now it's not so expensive. But Sharon Bloom, who was a 3M worker, lived in St. Paul, and we actually think the murder may have occurred in Apple Valley.
Oh, okay.
At his home.
I knew 3M was involved in
yeah,
that.
She worked there, yeah. And then she lived in St. Paul. So, and that was, you know, that's another one where the family, I think, didn't expect anyone to be still working a cold case like that. I think they thought, well, we know he did it. He'll just never be brought to justice. And sure, you can argue, oh, you wasted all these resources of Rice County's when the murder occurred someplace else, and it was just they dumped the body here. But, you know, every case usually has a victim attached to it, and they do have a right to justice, and they have a right to at least have the case put before a jury, and hopefully, you know, we have enough evidence to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, if there's not any evidence to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, we're not going to bring it. And that's what Jeff Thompson had to tell that family was, you know, at this time, we with the issue of what evidence was suppressed, we just don't have enough evidence to take it to trial and have a reasonable chance of proving it beyond a reasonable doubt.
And the danger there is if there's an assistant by the family or the cops or whoever to do it, you say, well, what if they get acquitted?
Then you can't prosecute them again. Double jeopardy attaches, and yes, you are correct. You would be faced with somebody who's literally got away with murder if later you found evidence to show beyond a reasonable doubt you still couldn't use it. So Jeff Thompson, in that case, really, you know, had a tough decision to make, and I think he made the right decision.
Obviously.
Well, yeah, hindsight's 20/20, yeah. But, you know, at that time he dismissed that, who knew where DNA evidence was going to be developed. So, I mean, but you never know when someone's going to confess or say something stupid to somebody, and yeah, you can bring the case again.
Well, O.J. is one of the cases that they had the DNA, but were able to convince a jury that that means nothing. It's a bunch of muckety-muck. And I remember the guy that presented that part of the O.J. case and the DNA, and he was going through all these charts, and it was just totally confusing. After he was acquitted, O.J., this guy flipped and went to help people as opposed to being a defense attorney. I can't. Do you know who I mean? Or
is that Shapiro? I'm not sure who.
It could be Shapiro. Short guy, nice hair. I'm sorry. Anyhow, it well, Shapiro, I don't think.
But the DNA evidence really doesn't. I mean, it establishes you were there, but, you know, if it's a domestic assault case, of course it's in their home. Yeah. Of course my DNA's there. I mean, we had a case where, another case where a body was dumped out by the Big Steer. And in that case, we had a lot of DNA from different people on the body. And we went through, the investigators at the Sheriff's Department went through quite a few suspects linked by DNA to the body. Some we thought, oh, this is the guy, but, you know, they had an alibi. They had witnesses to say, no, they were here. They weren't with her that night. And then just out of chance, we had an individual who had, I think it was a felony DWI or felony check, ended up in our jail, happenstance. But we had submitted the DNA to the national database. They called our jail and said, our investigator, and said, hey, do you have a jail in Rice County? Yeah. Well, we think your guy's there. And the investigator, Dave Stenzer, at the time, it's like, what are the odds? It's just going to be another dead end. But we talked, like, well, you got to go do the interview. And read him his rights, did an interview. Nope, don't know the victim, never heard of her, wouldn't be able to pick her out of the lineup. And then he asked, well, why did we find your DNA? And you can visibly see the guy. You got me. Confessed. And it helped make the case, but not because it was the only DNA we had.
So he confessed to it because you had his DNA, but what he didn't know is that you had a whole bunch of different people.
A lot of other suspects as well.
Now, by confessing, do you, I'm sure the defense attorney does, but do you talk to the defense attorney and try to make a deal, because he confessed and didn't go through all the rigmarole and expense and cost and challenge? You guys do work with defense attorneys and make a deal, right?
Yeah, most prosecutor offices have guidelines. I know I did when I was here. And typically the bottom of the box is what you offer. Here in Minnesota, we have what's known as the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines, one of the first in the world. We're a leader in sentencing. And one of the things about our sentencing is that we can tell you what you commit, whatever crime. You can tell me whatever crime you want to commit. I can take it to a grid. I can look up the crime, where it falls. It's a level 6, and you've got whatever criminal history. Wayne Eddy's got 5 prior criminal history score. You go down that grid, there's a box. It's 20% up, 20% down, but the mid-box is kind of the standard sentence the judge should give unless there's something aggravating or mitigating in the crime. But they can sentence at the low end or the top end for no reason at all. And typically, as a prosecutor, you'd offer the bottom of the box to avoid the expense of a trial, or if the victim doesn't really want to have to testify or whatever, but you got a strong case, bottom of the box is a pretty generous offer. That's a 20% discount. I bet you'd buy a lot of things at 20% off, right? Hearing aids?
Yeah. What?
What?
Yeah. 21 minutes before it's 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is Paul Bowmaster, and he is an attorney, and he is a prosecuting attorney in Dakota County, transitioning, however, to another position in Dakota County, and a former Rice County attorney.
Welcome home to Northfield Manor. On the campus of Northfield Retirement Community, Northfield Manor is proud to offer HUD Section 8 subsidized equal opportunity housing for adults 62 and older. Take advantage of all amenities on campus, including our state-of-the-art theater, Imelda's Marketplace, Fitness Center, Main Street Cafe, walking trails, and more. Call today, 507-650-7332. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
You know, the world is full of mind-blowing marvels, and National Geographic Kids has come out with a new book series that we're not on television. Paul has one in his hand, and he's doing the Vanna White movement. Anyhow, this new book series uncovers our planet's most peculiar phenomena, puzzles from the past, eye-opening inventions, astonishing animals, and so much more. Terry Knight's guest today on 15 with the author at 11 o'clock is Stephanie Warren Drimmer, author of Ultimate Secrets Revealed, a closer look at the weirdest, wildest facts on Earth. She talks about the research and reveals a few of the wild facts in the book, and that will be on at 11 o'clock. Paul, I got an idea. Why don't you just open that book to any page and use the microphone here and tell us what you're... he's opening the book now, and he's flipping... No, he's just opening it. And here's a fact.
Let's see. Why are pigs traditionally used to find truffles?
I know about that.
Oh, well, what's the answer?
Yeah. What's the answer? What's the question?
Why are pigs traditionally used to find truffles?
Because they, number one, have a great sense of smell, and number two, they can dig with their snout and expose the bulb.
That's pretty good.
Thank you. Got another one?
Let's see. Here's one. First of all, what exactly is a truffle?
A truffle is a very expensive vegetable that is a root vegetable, and they use it to top off wonderful desserts, and that's all I know. If that's right, I don't even know. What is a truffle?
Truffles are mushrooms.
Oh.
Who knew? And there's thousands of species of them in North America alone.
Yeah. Yeah, they do use various animals to find those things. It's pretty amazing.
Who knew?
Who knew? Well, we're back with our guest this morning, the former Rice County attorney. That's the full title he held for many years, a decade or more, and now is in Dakota County, which is a much larger county. Do you practice out of Hastings or out of Apple Valley or both?
Primarily Hastings, and sometimes I go up to Northern.
Okay.
The West St. Paul.
Okay. Reminiscing in regards to some of the cases in Rice County, which a lot of our listeners live in, including me, what was the deal that's tickling the back of my memory about a house that was out in the country and there was a fire and there were several deaths in that fire? Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
Well, tell us about that.
That was really a tragedy.
Yes, yes.
An individual who had clearly mental health issues had decided in the midst of a divorce with his wife that he would end his life as well as the life of his children, and kind of stick it to his wife and burn everything down around him, basically. That's just a tragedy all around.
How many people perished?
I believe he had two children, himself, and there's one other individual, but I'm not sure what the relationship was there. I think it might have been a stepchild.
Okay. Well, they were shot and then the fire?
I believe so.
Okay. Gosh. Right here in Rice County.
Right here in Rice County.
Wow.
That was really a tragedy.
It's 60 minutes before 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Paul, I was going to save this question until the second hour, but I can't resist. What is your most memorable case as a prosecutor in regards, maybe the one you just described was the most tragic and out of many, and the funniest, and the most fun, and response that you go ahead, just you know what I'm talking about.
Memorable, I would Melker Dinkel's going to stick with me for quite a while. Certainly not funny, very dark. But the depravity of that case to me will stick with me. To have somebody out patrolling and trolling the internet looking for people who are suicidal so that he can help push them off the edge, so to speak.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. So that one will stick with me. And again, it's just the depravity of it and how people who are out at their lowest point could become victims of somebody like that.
How many did he have? Two?
Two that we prosecuted him on, yes.
Okay.
One out of Canada and one out of Great Britain. And the reason we had those were basically modern technology. It's not that modern anymore, but just the memories on those computers that were saved. A lot of his victims, the computers, were taken to the Goodwill or junked or somebody wrote over them, sold them, whatever. So we just didn't have that evidence. And that made all the difference in that those two cases. One was a coroner in England had actually done a coroner's inquest. And part of that process was the forensic on the computer, so we had all of that saved.
is to go off of that one before you come up with some other. How much drama in real life is there by having evidence on a computer, like on the TV shows, a lot of them, well, it's right here on the computer. To me, I looked at that and I say, how stupid, especially killing for hire and phones, telephones, and I'm going, how dumb are they? And there are real cases that I've seen that do that.
Absolutely. In fact, we're still sorting out what requires a warrant, what doesn't require a warrant. The Supreme Court just recently, again, came down with an opinion regarding the expectation of privacy, basically. And from what the opinion said, they gave us, basically, the law enforcement people, 7 days you can track somebody's phone. After that, you got to get a warrant to get that information. And all we're talking here is just the information.
Wait a minute. Excuse me. You can do that without a warrant? Unless it's past 7 days, then you have to get a warrant. Well, that sounds, it should be the opposite. You have to have a warrant to get it the first time, and then...
The Supreme Court, I think, was looking at it as emergency situations where you have a kidnapping or whatever. Of course, we don't want you to have to go get a warrant. Of course, if you're thinking, you know, this is an ongoing bank robbery or ongoing conspiracy to do something, of course, you shouldn't have to get a warrant. This is information held by a third party, not the individual. They're not going into your home to look for that information. They're not going on to your phone to look for that information. It's actually the information that's stored up in the tower. It's the signals that bounce. That's where they can say you're within this range. And if you have multiple towers, you can actually get pretty close to pinpointing where that individual is. And that's, for probably the last 10 years, been technology that police have used in order to track people.
Now, I remember a case out in California where they were trying to find a couple that got caught in the forest in a big snowstorm. And the telephone company would not cooperate with authorities to give them that information. So, I'm confused.
Well, that's when a lot of states put statutes into place that force the companies to give that, and actually the federal statute allows them to give that information in those situations. Now,
how quickly can you get that?
It's out there. I don't think it takes more than a call.
Okay, so you could call them up and say, here's the number, and within an hour or a day?
I would think it's quicker than that now, Wayne.
Gee whiz. Wow.
It is not information that would be hard to gather.
Okay, that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, privacy concerns in our modern era, I think, have morphed quite a bit as to what an expectation of privacy is. You look on Facebook or Snapchat or some of the other media out there, the things you'll find on people that they put out themselves freely and voluntarily is really quite amazing. And then if you...
Quite stupid, too, isn't it?
Yeah, well, if you... Yeah, and if you're concerned about privacy and from a corporate standpoint, as far as corporations having your information, Google, Facebook, Amazon, they can pretty much tailor advertising to you because they know you're looking for hearing aids or whatever. They're going to track what you're buying or what your needs might be. And in a way, it's convenient because you're getting the information that's relevant to you. But in a way, it's kind of scary that they know you better probably than anybody else on the planet.
And if you were a wife and your husband's coming home late, you could do it yourself. And if you had a tracker on his phone?
Oh, absolutely. You can do that with your kids.
Yeah. And... So, anyhow, that's a modern era of the old matchbook with the telephone number on it that my mother used to find in my dad's pants.
Knew where you were by that?
Yeah. Oh, so what were you
doing? A little investigating.
Brew Cruise.
Yeah, and it's really at the fingertips of anybody who has command of that technology or those sort data sources. And that's really what we're talking about. And I know on a statewide level, in Minnesota, we have those discussions. I belong to a group, used to be known as CrimNet, but it's a criminal justice and juvenile justice information council that we talk about those issues. And one of the things we're talking about is how to do instant ID. So when you get pulled over, you can't give them my name. Say, I'm Paul Bullmaster. Here's his date of birth. They run it. Oh, you're clear. You're free to go. Or here's your ticket. And then I end up saying, I never got a ticket. They're looking at ways that we can either have facial recognition or biometric, like a fingerprint. Right at the time that you're issued the ticket, you have to put your fingerprint on it. And a lot of people have concerns that, you know, by giving up that or having a public record made of my face, am I losing some privacy there? Am I going to be on a list somewhere? How is the government going to use it? People have a lot more concern in how the government's going to use their information than they do Google or Amazon or Facebook. I think it should be an equal concern, but particularly when it comes to government, I mean, we do have a right to expect our government to use our information appropriately and secure our information appropriately.
You mentioned when you get pulled over, and I say I'm Paul Bullmaster, they have a computer in their car that brings your name up and your picture because it's on your license, and so I'm not Paul Bullmaster anymore. But when I was a kid, and I'm talking 18, 19 years old, I had a dear friend. Unfortunately, he passed away, and it just broke me up. And his name was Ed Lambert, and we were both the same age. I knew his birthday, and I knew his address, 664 Wilson. We were both 6 feet tall, blue eyes, 140 pounds. And back in those
days, I know where this is going.
Well, back in those days, if my license was suspended, I would say I was him and I forgot my license, and they give you a ticket and it costs $2. $2. Fine, for not having the license. And then when his was suspended, mine was good. When he got stopped, he used my name. And I thought, isn't that nice? I mean, nobody was doing anything bad. You saved a few dollars and all that.
But it was still wrong, Wayne.
Well, for 90 days, I walked by foot through rain and snow, all kinds of soot.
Uphill?
Yeah. I wrote a poem to the license department, and Bill Deal, I don't know if you remember that name, he was a disc jockey on WDGY, and he had a column in the St. Paul paper, printed the letter I wrote to the license department. They were
so do you still know it?
We're returning your license. We're happy to say, I know that it's a long 90 days, so, but one line in there was, carry your license, do not fail, because maybe next time you're going to end up in jail. It was funny. I should find
that's pretty
thing.
Good. Yeah. I didn't know you were a poet.
Oh, yeah. 5 minutes before 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio, Paul the guy who has a French name, Paul Bullmaster, is my guest, and we will be back in 30 seconds. No, 29.3.
Hi, I'm Alyssa Bandle, social worker at Three Links. Being a caregiver to someone who has a form of dementia can be exhausting. Finding social support is one of the best ways you can cope. At Three Links, we host caregiver support meetings. Facilitated by Three Links social workers, the meetings are tailored to your questions. Join us the second Wednesday of each month from 4 to 5 p.m. at Three Links Care Center. Call 664-8865 or find out more at threelinks.org.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. We are KYMN, a friend you can count on. And former Rice County District Attorney Paul Bullmaster is my guest this morning. He now works for Dakota County as a prosecutor, and he is transitioning into the civil courts in the immediate future, I assume.
Yes, I've been actually making the process since June.
Okay. Now, do you still live in Northfield?
Absolutely.
Yeah. How many kids do you and your wife have?
Three.
One of each?
We have two boys and one girl.
And what are their names?
Sid is my oldest.
Sid?
Sid.
As in S?
Sydney.
Sydney, okay. I that name's familiar to me. Sydney, okay. And then after Sydney?
Jack.
How old is Sydney, by the way?
Sid is, what is she now, 25?
Wow. How old is Jack?
Jack is 21.
And your third?
Will.
And how old is Will?
He's a ninth grader. That makes him, what, 14?
Yeah, 15.
14.
Yeah.
14. He's 14.
14, okay. So you, it's kind of nice you still have a child at home?
Yes.
Do you have, you know, does Jack or Sydney still live at home?
No, Will's the only one at home. Jack's off at school, and Sid lives out in Southern California, in L.A.
Oh, boy. Did you ever visit her out there?
Not yet. My wife's been out there a couple times. I'm going to go out and visit her, I think, sometime here this year.
I wouldn't want to live in that county.
L.A.'s an interesting place. It's got a lot of things going for it. But, yeah, it's got some issues, too. She's at the University of Southern California, though, so that's a nice, pretty campus she works on.
And they all they have to fear are forest fires, mudslides.
That's scary, yeah.
Earthquakes.
Shark attacks.
Yeah. So, Paul, we were talking about your being a prosecuting attorney. Do you, like, go out and have coffee with the defense attorney after a trial?
Yeah, I have friends that are defense attorneys, and I don't usually go out having coffee or anything with them, but we'll meet at times. And
I mean, sometimes isn't it impossible not to be friends with a defense attorney that you genuinely enjoy each other's company and interests?
Yeah, that's true. I supported a defense attorney up in Ramsey County who was running for judge, Pao Yang.
You supported him?
Yeah, and he won, so that's okay. Kind of, he beat the incumbent.
So you'll never, well, never say never, but will ever your paths cross in regards to prosecuting?
He's in Ramsey County, so I doubt it. I mean, they may, but...
Okay. What's a typical day in Dakota County as a prosecutor?
Well, there's charging to be done almost every day. There's cases coming in from all of the different departments that have police forces and the sheriff's office, drug task force. As those cases come in, they're divvied up amongst the attorneys. There's trials every Monday. You'll have four or five trials set. On Monday, we figure out what's going to be tried, when and where. Fridays are usually the contested court dates where you have contested hearings, and those can be all-day affairs. Usually that's contesting the stop, contesting the search, whatever issues. Sometimes suppression issues based on, you know, some rule of evidence, or there wasn't a Miranda warning given, or whatever the defense wants to litigate, that's done at that hearing. And those are Fridays. Wednesday and Thursday are typically omnibus hearing days, and those are times where you talk about settlement possibly of the case, or talk about contested issues that might be needed, or further discovery. And on those days, you can have 10 to 20 cases each day set on, where you're going down to court morning and afternoon, working on your case with the defense attorney. And that's where you do spend a lot of time with the defense counsels, defense attorneys in the courthouse.
I'm going to take a brief break here. It's 10 o'clock, and take a break and have my second hour theme. I'll play that for you. Do you know what it is? Okay.
I've heard it. I just can't name it.
This is KYMN Radio from Northfield, Minnesota. For over 50 years, 1080 on your AM dial, and now 95.1 FM, The One.
And if you see for more? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? Every summer we can rent a cottage in the Isle of Wight if it's not too dear. We shall scrimp,
we shall scrimp
and save. Grandchildren on your knee. Vera, Chuck and Dave. Send me a postcard, drop me a line.
When I'm 64, as performed by the Beatles, Paul McCartney in particular, and it is now 10, I'll give you the exact time here on KYMN. No, I won't. That's covered up. That's all right. It's 10:03. How's that sound? Paul Bowmaster is my guest on KYMN Radio. He is a practicing attorney for the county of Dakota, and he also was a former Rice County attorney. And we're talking about crime and things like that. Is it as exciting as it is shown on television and in movies and in books?
I think it's exciting, but most people find it a little dull, I think, just because of the procedures we have to go through in a trial, as far as following the rules, following the proper procedure for introducing evidence. It can be pretty scripted and dry.
Well, you have to cover your bases and you have to do it right.
Exactly.
Because a judge does not want to try a case where something isn't made crystal clear, and then they have a opportunity to say, wait a minute, so-and-so said when they this and that, and so you're trying to avoid a mistrial.
Exactly.
Yeah. And have you had those that you couldn't avoid, that you blew it, or the state blew it, or the county, rather?
No. As far as, what do you mean, like being thrown out for?
When they appeal, they win. Because the prosecuting attorney, the county, didn't do something properly or presented something improperly.
I have had cases where the Supreme Court's decided the law one way or the other, which, you know, decided the case. And usually in those cases, we do what's known as a Lothenbach plea, where we stipulate to the facts. Everyone knows, here are the facts. There's no question as to what happened, but what law applies or how the law is interpreted will make the difference between guilt or innocence. And that's something that is done on a fairly routine basis, where then it goes before the Court of Appeals. Sometimes they end there at the Intermediate Court of Appeals here in the state of Minnesota. If they say, no, it should be this way, state wins or state loses. Or they say, it should be this way, and the defense doesn't like it, the state doesn't like it, they appeal to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court then makes the ultimate decision. And we had one of those that dealt with how, whether or not we were a purity state, basically, for weighing drugs. We had a case that involved the weight of bong water that was being saved for future use. Methamphetamine was in the bong water. Methamphetamine isn't water soluble, so you can reuse it. All of that meth in that water will still get you high again. So a lot of meth users, in order to get the most out of their meth, they'll smoke it, and then they'll also drink the water in the bong.
I never ever heard of that before.
Well, you're probably not a meth user then.
No.
That's good. But that was a case where, can you count the whole weight of the bong water? And that went up on stipulated facts all the way up to the Supreme Court, and they said, yeah.
Well, was it because the charges can be worse if there's more methamphetamine?
Yes. In Minnesota, we go by the weight of the drugs, how much you have on you.
And you got to weigh the water and use it as for real methamphetamine.
It was part of a mixture. So, I mean, the meth in there was stored for that purpose.
The defendant got a bigger sentence because he had a larger amount.
In this particular case, actually, the sentence wasn't really the issue. They were going to get the same because of other issues as well. So,
that's a pretty trying thing. Are you saying, well, we get to use the water weight too? That's pretty cool move.
Well, it's really the defendant is the one who chooses how they're going to store their meth. and in case of dealers, they will take what may be, you know, a pound of meth and mix in. I mean, the big distributor will then mix in cutting agents, at which, you know, baby powder, whatever they're putting in with it, they'll take that pound and make 10 pounds. And then they'll sell it. So that's their decision to widen their product to manufacture it into a greater amount to sell.
This would be a good time to just ask you straight out, what's your thought in regards to drug use and sales? Is it an epidemic in your county?
I think drugs nationwide have been an epidemic for a long, long time. I think our best approach is not one silver bullet. You know, people say, well, you need a drug court. Well, you need, you know, higher sentences or less sentences or more treatment. I don't think there's one magic bullet. Early intervention, I know, works best, and stopping the problem before it occurs, getting those children that are at risk to becoming chemical dependent early, and making sure they don't start using drugs, I think, is probably the best prevention. But all the other programs that we have are important as well. A lot of our crime that we see throughout the state is generated from mental health and chemical dependency. And, you know, people say, well, drugs aren't really, you know, a victim-related crime. That drug use is driving a lot of the victim crimes that we see of thefts and burglaries, assaults, domestics, stem from chemical dependency. And so, yes, the drug crime itself typically has no victims attached to it, but they are generating those crimes.
Is it equal male, female?
That I would have to look at stats. I would venture to guess, though, the male population we see more of. Simply looking at the prison statistics that I've had a chance to look at, I was talking at Bethel Lutheran Church here about sentencings and the prison population. Did you know Rice County is the largest prison in the state of Minnesota?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because
I was thinking that was a weird fact that you might not have known.
Well, St. Cloud's pretty small, and Oak
Park Heights.
Yeah, I had the warden on the air, and the size of that is not very big compared to the campus at Faribault.
Right. No, Faribault is clearly the largest prison. But when you look at those stats, we only have one woman prison for women here in the state of Minnesota, and that's in Shakopee.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I used to, when I was a kid, you know, hey, man, there's a jail for ladies in Shakopee. You know, we would drive around. It didn't look like a prison. And I remember the first time I saw a Red Wing from the outside. And, you know, that impressed me how big that is down there for that. But when you get, do you ever get people that are benefiting by the sales of drugs that don't use themselves? And they're just taking advantage of those that are already victim of methamphetamine or heroin or whatever?
Yes, that does occur. They have no desire to use the drug. They just want to make money. And they can make a lot of money quick, if as long as they're willing to take that risk.
And do you think that eventually all are caught? Most are caught? Few are caught? None are caught? Well, it can't be none, but
I would say we're probably batting 500.
Well, that's good.
I think we do a good job in Dakota County and throughout the state of Minnesota of trying to get to the larger drug dealers and taking down the source. That said, obviously a lot is still getting through.
What about the mules that don't know that they're carrying drugs? How does the court handle them?
We don't see many of those. I don't think I've ever had one that didn't know they were carrying drugs.
Okay.
I'd put it to you this way, Wayne. If you had $20,000, would you just hand it to somebody that didn't know what they had or and say, here's a bag, take care of this for me?
Well, supposedly that happens a lot in foreign countries where they talk a good-looking guy will talk a woman who doesn't have a guy in her life to take a trip to Colombia or take a trip to Iraq or wherever they're picking up. So it does happen.
I'm sure it does, but I think they're probably then traveling with them and keeping a close eye on where that bag's going.
Yeah. So how about scary? What's the scariest person that you had to prosecute? Or maybe there's several that people, these are good stories, interesting, and they're public. What you're doing is all public, so you can tell us about it, where other attorneys will say, I'm sorry, I have the attorney privilege here, I can't talk about it. But you can, because you've prosecuted them.
I would say one of the scarier people I prosecuted was an individual that did a murder-for-hire scheme out of the prison here in Faribault. And he was scary because I think he was nuts, a true sociopath, that he was going to eliminate anybody who was, as he put it, out to get him. And that's kind of scary, that he saw nothing wrong with his conduct. Those were simply obstacles that he needed to get rid of.
Now, the murder occurred in the prison?
No, he was trying to hire others to do murders for him outside of the prison.
Did he succeed?
No. Fortunately, one of the individuals stepped forward and said, this guy's serious. This guy's nuts.
And so did you prosecute him?
Yes, we did.
Murder, what is that? What is the charge?
Conspiracy to commit murder.
Yeah.
And he was convicted.
And added on to his sentence that he already was serving.
Yes, those are consecutive. If you commit a crime within a prison, it's consecutive.
It is?
Yes.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
It's how they keep them in line. Now, if you're doing a life sentence, and then that's really the tragedy and why we have Oak Park Heights, is that at that point, there's really no disciplinary what are you going to do to me? I'm already doing two life sentences. And that's where it's very dangerous for the people who work in the prison system.
Well, Thompson. I was in prison with him, his dad. And we went up there, we being the JCs, and they had a JC chapter in the prison, and we had a statewide program that was going on. And so my role was to help recruit people to sell. Now, I was seated next to Thompson, and I'm from St. Paul, and it happened in Highland Park, and it was a high-profile murder. And I didn't know it was him at the time until after the speech, and then we talked. And so they do release some prisoners to go outside and do civil activities, which is beneficial. So I'm talking to this big guy. I mean, he was 6'5", I'm sure. And he's got tattoos everywhere. And he had a ponytail. And he was the chairman of the Honey Sunday, it was called, in the prison. So I said, I got an idea. Why don't you help us down in Northfield and, talk to our chapter and, get us roused up so we can go out and do this Honey Sunday project. He said, well, no, I can't be let out of the prison. Wait a minute. We've had a dozen people that have gone out and helped the JCs from the prison. He said, well, I can't. How come? double murder.
Yeah, that'll curtail your...
I looked at him and I thought, oh, wow, I could just see that. Scared the heck? Well, it didn't scare me then. Well, it gave me the shivers.
You know, and that's a good point, is a lot of people look and assume that people who are in prison are going to stay in prison. They're not. There's very few that are doing life in the state of Minnesota. I think it's around 300 individuals. So there's not that many people that are never getting out. Those people who do get out, I think Minnesota, the one area that we need to do more of is reintegration, where when felons are released, people don't shriek from them and think, oh, you're a felon, oh my gosh. You know, these are people who have made the mistakes in life that, you know, put them in prison, but once they've paid their debt to society and done their time, we really need to work on getting them back into society as productive people, not going back to their criminal elements that, you know, put them in prison, but getting them into new lives that will be productive, that will benefit all of us if they stay on the straight and narrow. Recidivism is one of the things that we can make progress on. I really believe that that's an area that needs to be worked on in the state of Minnesota.
Well, and staying on the subject of a murderer and a murder, most murders are done within a family. They know
each other usually somehow,
yeah,
whether it's familial, yeah, business, social, yeah, contacts. There's the
first suspect.
The scary psychopath you don't normally see. Yeah. But we do have them where it's just a random, they selected someone because they wanted to kill somebody.
No, up in Farmington, I think, and you go on, gee, is it 50, and you head towards east towards the river, is a beautiful established Hmong
temple.
Gorgeous.
Yep.
I've been there a couple
of times. Just outside
of
Hampton.
And I understand that they, too, have members that look bright and shiny that may be crooks. Well, like kind of a gang?
I'm not familiar
with
that.
You never prosecuted any?
No.
Okay. Well, I guess that's an inside story.
There's another temple off Cedar in Lakeville, just south of Lakeville.
I stopped there, too. I wanted to have one of them talk about it and tell me about it. But the Lakeville one, they couldn't understand English. Who's this guy? I bolted a guy riding in on a motorcycle saying, hey, I want you on my radio show. Huh? It's 1020 on 1080 Radio, and I'll tell you what, my guest this morning is going to do something that I think he probably would like to do. Would you please tell the people listening about the book that is going to be, Terry Knight's going to be talking to the author?
Yes, they're going to be talking about the new National Geographic's Ultimate Secrets Revealed, a close look at the weirdest, wildest facts on Earth, which we were just talking about with the truffles. They'll be talking. There's a lot of information in the book. Terry Knight's guest today on 15 with the author is Stephanie Warren Drimmer, author of The Ultimate Secrets Revealed. And as you and I have demonstrated, there's a lot of interesting facts. Do you want one now?
Sure.
How does the scent of smell work?
How does the scent of smell work? It works with tiny, tiny particles of hair that tell the brain that you should or should not eat this item.
I'm impressed. Wayne, have you read this book?
No, I haven't.
It's a combination. I'm giving you it's chemicals and the hair follicles. You're good, Wayne.
Thank you. That's 3 out of 3.
I know. I'm going to find one to stump
no,
you.
No, finish the promo.
I'm sorry.
I want to stay at 1,000.
She'll be talking about the book and the research and reveal a few of the wild facts in the book, as we've been doing this morning. I hope we didn't give away all the good stuff. And that's at 11 o'clock this morning.
On KYMN, a friend you can't count on, Paul Bowmaster is my guest on Kim. And, Paul, I'm asking, I like Law and Order, not the show. I have never even watched that show. I haven't. But I read a lot of true crime. and how some are really stupid, and how some are pretty doggone sharp on what they do and how they're capable of putting people off. But it all, you know, the book always ends with the guy or the gal caught. So is it over 50% that it's a slam dunk for your job as a district attorney in Dakota County?
I don't think anywhere is it a slam dunk when we have a high standard, beyond a reasonable doubt. People basically have to use their common sense and say, yeah, they did it, to find it beyond a reasonable doubt, that I have no question that this is the guy or this is the woman that did it. So I don't know that there's any case that's a slam dunk. I've lost cases that I thought, there's no way I'm going to lose this. And I've won cases that I thought, this is going to be really hard. And it would depend on them believing or not believing a certain witness or believing or not believing a certain piece of evidence. So there's never a slam dunk, one way or the other. And that's why we have people who plead in order to secure the agreed deal of low end of the box or whatever it is, because of that, that they say, I do have something to lose if I am convicted.
What about...
The prosecutor generally has nothing to lose other than making sure justice is done and putting their best case in. And again, you can get back to, well, is that a waste of time? I can almost guarantee you no victim ever felt going to trial was a waste of their time, even with an acquittal. And, you know, most of the acquittals that I've ever had have been criminal sexual misconduct cases, and those will never be slam dunks, because it's typically he said, she said. DNA doesn't always help or anything else, yeah, because it's she said it wasn't consensual, he said it was.
And of course, that's where the social media comes in that can be beneficial to the defendant or to the accuser by the conversations they may have had before,
oh,
during,
absolutely,
or after. Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, even with that, it sometimes comes down to which of those do you believe? Was she setting him up, or was he setting her up? Or you manufacture your own social media. So, you know, unfortunately, in today's society, a lot of cases are tried out in the social media.
I was wondering.
I believed her. I didn't believe her. I believed him. I didn't believe him. You know what? That's not where it's supposed to be done. It's supposed to be done in a courthouse with 12 people in a jury box who receive the evidence that is admissible, and make a decision based off that evidence, not how they heard something online or some rumor over here.
And you can't read the newspaper, you can't read the listener radio or television. And I'm thinking, that's pretty hard to do in a lengthy case.
It is. But, you know, being a juror is not an easy task, because you are, you know, I've had jurors come up to me and say, because they read the paper afterwards and find out this guy's done it three other times or whatever, why didn't you tell us that? We would have convicted. Well, that's why, because you would have convicted because he had been guilty of criminal sexual misconduct two other times. You had to decide, was he guilty this time?
Yeah, and that sometimes is not liked by a lot of people. That
no.
People said, no, he's a serial rapist or whatever. What is it? Is it voyeur? Is that when you choose jurists?
Yeah, when we do our jury selection and we ask questions, the judge typically in the state of Minnesota asks all the preliminary questions about, you know, where you live, how many kids you got, where you work, what's your life experience, and then the defense goes, and then the state goes, asking questions. And then we have a deselection process, not really a jury selection process. We bring in the jurors, and then the defense has 5 strikes, the state has 3 strikes, so 8 people are taken off that panel. And then we get down to either 13 or 12 jurors. We usually want 13. We want an alternate in case somebody gets sick or something halfway through the trial. You don't want to start over.
Yeah. What about people that need to work? And do they get dismissed most times? Or do they say, I want to be a juror?
Yeah, we ask those questions. Is this a bad time for you to be on the jury? Yeah, I've got heart surgery, or yeah, my dad's going into the hospital,
or I've
got a vacation planned. Yeah, or I'm a contractor and I've got my busy season right now. Call me in January. I've got nothing going on then. In the courts, usually you can do that in advance. We'll reschedule you.
What compensation does a person get that has a job that's, that, let's say they're working for $20 an hour and they have
Yeah, they're probably only get $25
the day for the whole day.
Or with mileage.
The whole, for each day.
Right.
Okay. So that's, it affects them in the pocketbook.
Absolutely. A lot of employers, larger corporations, will, you just have to turn
Make
in
the
your
difference,
jury, yeah, you turn in your jury check and we'll give you a regular pay.
Is it a law that you must keep that person's job while he or she's a jurist?
Yeah, you cannot dismiss somebody because they went to jury duty or because they went to vote or other civic duties.
Did you ever come across cases like that where somebody has been fired because they served on jury for 2 weeks?
I have never heard anyone that's been fired. I mean, it might happen, but they're going to get their job back if they want it.
Paul Bowmaster is my guest. He's a district, former district attorney for Rice County, and now is an official attorney, a prosecuting attorney in Dakota County. What about somebody charged with pornography, particularly involving minors, children? Do you show evidence to the entire people in the court, or just to the jurors, or just to the judge, or not at all?
Typically, we won't be introducing those photos. A lot of the very few of those cases go to trial because they are the facts generally aren't in dispute. Once you've won the contested hearing, to keep those pictures out. But they'll do witnesses who will testify as to these are known series or this is a known individual. These photos were taken X date. They depicted. They'll testify to what they show. If it does end up going to trial, we typically will have to publish those and we'll publish them to the jurors.
Okay. Now, what about...
In open court.
What about drive-offs at let's say, Ziggy's over here or... is that kind of a pesky situation, or is it the cops go get them and get them to reimburse? Or
that's a serious crime. Don't you read the warnings on the pumps?
Yeah. Okay, tell me about how serious it is.
Well, typically that doesn't happen that often anymore, mostly because everybody knows there's a camera getting my license plates, my photo. It's going to be a real tough sell that it wasn't me. it wasn't my car. Sometimes there'll be people driving other cars, stolen cars, and they'll drive off because they don't care. But that isn't a crime that I've seen very much of.
What about car theft? Is that a major issue? Does that happen every day? You got another one? Or?
Not every day, but I think with today's technology and cars, I think everyone knows it's pretty easy to track a car as well.
Do you think that's good? For example, I have, what is it?
OnStar?
Yeah, but I don't buy it.
Right, but it can still be activated.
And I believe that they can, if they want to, turn on the microphone and listen to a conversation. I don't know if that they can do that with the radio playing or not. But I know, I remember the first time I ever heard of it, I think it was Tom Furlong, said that this Cadillac or whatever it was stolen, and that the thieves were told, pull over, we are behind you and in front of you. And they got the guys right away up in the cities.
Yep.
That's a pretty neat way for that, but do you think that involves an invasion of privacy?
I would have to say yes. That, and I think they'd be incredibly bored if they were listening to my conversations.
But it's there.
Yes.
And they
people say that about the in-home aids or, you know, the Alexa-type programs. Now that I've said Alexa on the air, I bet a lot of people's Alexas just went off.
Yeah.
Say, Alexa, what time is it? And
yeah.
It'll tell you what time it is.
Oh, you're talking about those things that they show in commercials in the house? Wow, you talk about stupid. They can know everything. I guess you can. If you have one in your bedroom, they'll hear you. Or maybe see you. They have cameras now on them,
yeah,
I guess.
Some have video.
Oh, boy. You had any cases involving that?
I have not.
Are you hopeful that you don't?
I have not thought about how that would impact prosecution if you were able to get information off of a Alexa-type application that might record a crime occurring.
How about...
I know they've, with the Ring video cameras at front doors and stuff, that has become quite an asset to law enforcement in their ability to get photo evidence of somebody at the scene, identifying them through that with... We now have technology that basically can look at the gait and identify you, look at the facial recognition on a video and identify you. So those have become much more prevalent, and police now, when they go out to a scene, will look around and say, hey, do you have Ring or do you have a video surveillance system? And oftentimes the answer is yes now, where that used to be only the rich and famous would have cameras, you know, videotaping what's going around their around their house. Now we have them inside the house, outside the house, which I think will event. It's like police cameras, the body cams.
Yeah.
Those will certainly impact how cases are tried.
That's good.
I think we're moving to the age where you're going to be able to push play and the jury's going to see exactly what happened, especially in cases involving the law enforcement shootings and where you have law enforcement coming in with a body cam. They're not always the best because they're usually worn on the chest. Some are at the eye level, but you get the impression of what's going on. You can see if there's multiple cameras there from different angles, what's going on.
Have you ever had? Have you ever prosecuted a case of people stealing a truck full of goodies? You know, big semis, whether they're cigarettes or toys or
snowmobiles.
Snowmobile. Oh, yeah, you must have had a case. Huh?
I have.
What
yes.
happened?
Just a case where they basically hijacked a truck. It was an inside job.
And did they get prosecuted?
Yes, they did.
Was it hard?
No, that was actually an insurance fraud.
Okay, so do you work hand-in-hand with the insurance investigators?
They will usually turn over any information they have to the police who are investigating the case. But, yeah, I mean, it's not hand-in-hand. They're not typically called as witnesses.
Do they have more privileges or more information?
The insured has an obligation to give them access to information, so, yeah. And sometimes that's what's forwarded is, they told us this. Well, obviously they weren't telling the truth because we found the stuff on their farm or whatever.
Yeah. Did you ever try somebody in regards to a plane, an airplane?
In what way?
Well, that's what I'm asking.
No.
Has a plane ever been involved in any of your prosecutorial efforts?
No. We've reviewed some cases from the Faribault Airport where they had some thefts, but that's about it.
Okay. I just wondering, you know. And so what about the longest trial that you participated in, either and or... Faribault, Rice County, and Dakota County?
That would have been probably the Rusty Torres trial, and that had a lot of evidence in it, a lot of testimony. DNA evidence was present, so a lot of forensic evidence, the coroner testifying. That was when we were using Ramsey County. Chain of custody, a lot of chain of custody issues, so a lot of people coming in saying, yes, I took the knife from here to there, and checked it into evidence. So that one took probably 6 weeks.
No, people tune in and out of the Wayne Eddy affair.
Yes.
So, you know, let's say what Torres' case was.
Rusty Torres had murdered Mr. Springer in Faribault just as I was coming on board as county attorney in 1999. And he went to trial. He was first-degree murder, and he was looking at life without parole. So he had nothing to lose.
What about your office? Now, I've been inside your office, and it's relatively small. Is it comparatively small to the office you have in Dakota County?
You mean as far as the number of attorneys and everything there?
Well, no, I'm talking about physical space.
Oh, no, an office is an office to me, so about the same.
Well, I just wondered because you had the best office in the building. But
the building is a 1929-1930 vintage building that had been remodeled, I think, for the third time. So it's a little cramped in
there. So where are you in the Hastings?
In the Dakota County Attorney's Office,
yeah.
Which is in the government center in Hastings. It's kind of a horseshoe-shaped building that's had several additions added, obviously, over the years.
Around
not the old one. There's an old courthouse, too, down in the
That one's not used anymore.
No.
What did they do with that? That's a historical building, right?
Oh, it's a it's a beautiful historical building dating back to, you know, the 1800s. That is, I believe, owned by the city now, and they use it. City Hall's there. The police department's there. They have an event center. They have rooms now in the old courtrooms that are used for events that people have receptions in and things like that. We had our Dakota County Attorney's Office Employee Appreciation Luncheon there just recently.
No, if somebody gets a traffic ticket.
That was a courthouse, by the way, in operation when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in Lakeville, so sometimes we'd have to go over there for speeding tickets, things like
that.
Because I never gave my buddies information.
Okay. Well, what about now? Where do people, how do they get there to the new courthouse where you work?
Take 47 straight to Hastings.
Yeah.
It's on the edge of town now by the Cub Food.
So you take
Walmart.
You take a right or a left on 61?
You would not go to 61, actually. You'd go to 40.
The stop-and-go light. On 47, when you come into Hastings, there's a stop-and-go light. You either go left or you go right.
Not there's on 47. You have to, if you turn, you're right, if you turn towards the grain elevator.
Yeah, which way do I go?
No, you take the left there.
And to go into the downtown area.
And then turn on to, no, you'd take a left there to go to General Sieben Drive, which takes you straight to the courthouse.
And what's on the corner of General Sieben Drive? Is it a football 55. Field?
55. The high school's there, too.
Yeah.
The new high school.
Okay, 55.
Yes.
Take a left.
Yes.
And then how far do you go?
55, actually, you don't have to be on 55. It's General Sieben. Straight to the courthouse.
Okay.
And then turn right into it.
All right. Well, I'd have to...
You hit two stoplights. You hit one here, and you hit one on 55. And
what do you mean here?
Here in town, for me anyway, when I'm leaving town.
Highway
3.
And 2. Second Street.
Yeah. To get to 47.
Okay. Then you take that right on 47.
Straight up.
Then you have a stop-and-go light when you get to Hastings.
55. At 55 in General Sieben.
And then you take a left.
No, you go straight.
You go straight.
Yeah, and then you take a left.
How can you go straight at that stoplight?
Because there's General Sieben that goes on to the high school.
Straight ahead.
Mm-hmm. Crossing over 55.
Remember
cross over 55.
There was a Wayne's Auto Body Shop there?
That's the other way.
What?
That's towards the grain elevator.
Okay. I won't. I don't see it. You can go straight at that stop and go light. Do you ever stop and have that chicken they have over at the M&H?
At the gas station?
Yeah.
Yeah, I call it gas station chicken.
Yeah.
Yes. It's actually pretty good.
They've been around a long time.
Oh,
M&H,
yeah.
I used to get... If you bought, 10 gallons of gas,
at least since the 70s.
A plate or something like that, or a glass. How old are you?
I'll be 56 in May.
Wow. You can retire now as a government official.
Hopefully.
You know. Why do cops retire at 55 or 20 years?
I'm not sure what the tradition was on it, but they actually raised that from age 50. You used to be able to retire at 50. I had a brother that retired when he was 50, who was a police officer in New Hope.
New Hope, okay.
Yeah.
So compared Northfield, or excuse me, Faribault, Rice County office to the Dakota County office in regards to socializing, Christmas parties, Halloween dress up.
We do a lot of fun things as an office.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like such a... like a hardcore go by the numbers, this is the way it is. It's a little less humane. Well, maybe it's because I know people in Rice County that I get that feeling.
Yeah, I really enjoy the people I work with in Dakota County, and they're a lot of fun, and we do things, we do events. I run with a lot of them, do running events still. Did the Hot Cider Run up in Bloomington with one of my colleagues.
How many miles is that?
That was a 5K.
Well, when did you take up running?
Probably 8th grade, 9th grade.
Oh, you've been doing it all your life?
Yeah, I ran for Lakeville when I grew up there.
Okay, and you grew up in Lakeville?
Yeah.
I thought you were up north further.
No, just right next door.
Oh, that's you were an attorney, practicing attorney for...
In Isani County.
Isani, that's
yes.
Where I got that.
I was an assistant county attorney in Isani before I came down here to Rice County.
So you graduated from Lakeville?
Yes.
And now... Where is your spirit, Lakeville South or Lakeville North?
You know, I've never really figured that out. I think the North is the Panthers. We were the Lakeville Panthers when I was
going to high school.
And then the South, I think, are the Cougars, which is just another word for Panthers, I guess.
Yeah.
But that town has changed quite a bit. When I was growing up, Northfield was the big city and Faribault was the big city. And go down to Oaks to do your school shopping, yeah. Not... Birdville Center, I think, opened up when I was a sophomore in high school, 1978 or 79.
And your high school was on 50, right?
Yes. Well, the school I started used to be Don McGuire, is now Don McGuire Middle School.
Okay. Did you ever spend any time out at the, don't tell me, I'll take a break, and then I'll tell you what I'm thinking here. Just a moment. Hold on. We're going to take a break.
If it doesn't challenge you, it doesn't change you. I'm Greg Berube, the owner of CrossFit Scopus. After spending time in our facility and with our team, we want our members to walk out of our doors feeling like a better version of themselves. You can lose weight, build muscle, and get a great workout in, but the community and support of Scopus will keep you coming back for more. Go to CrossFitScopus.com. We will help you build life-changing habits that improve your quality of life for now and for the future. We are CrossFit Scopus in Dundas, right by Menards.
Are you tired of that icky old shower, crumbling old tile, or outdated bathtub? Rebath can help in as little as one day. Rebath is locally owned and would be glad to meet with you for a free estimate. Call us today at 1-800-BATH-TUB to turn that old bathroom into new.
The Quarterback Club in Northfield serves the best flame-broiled burgers, baby back ribs, and chicken in Northfield. They also have daily specials that are sure to satisfy. Every meal is made to order, and you can dine in or take out. For daily specials, quality food, and great prices, make it the Quarterback Club in Northfield.
We're back on KYBN Radio, a friend you can count on. When I was in high school and just after high school, I hung around with guys from Lakeville, and we spent a little time on...
I knew you had some class in you.
Yeah, we had so much fun at Lake Marion.
Oh, yeah, Antlers Park.
Antlers Park.
Yep.
And at that time, it wasn't like it is today.
No, very different.
But back then...
Big pavilion.
Yep, we used to have what we called powwows. And today they call them keggers, I guess. And one thing that I did, I had an old 38 Ford with a 48 Merc engine and dual Stromberg 97 carburetors.
Nice.
and glass-packed pipes. And I'd back it into the lake. It was just fun and crazy. We had a good time. Used to play a game called Cardinal Huff Says, or something like that. Does the name Jim Eamon?
I know Jim Eamon.
You know Jim Eamon?
I do.
Well, then you can kind of tell.
I know his son better, but I do know Jim Eamon.
Well, he's former mayor.
Yep.
And if you knew Jim, then you know me, and... Can you imagine the fun we were having back then?
I can.
He had a convertible, and that was so cool. And he got a job holding a sign saying, stop, go slow. You know, those people that get just stand there and hold the sign.
Regulating traffic.
And he was making money compared to us. And he got that convertible, and boy, did we have fun. Good time was had by all, as they say. One of the things that I like to do on this show, Paul, and that is, what do you, I've asked all the questions, what do you really want, other than we enjoy our conversations when I see you on the street and hello, how are you, what is the thing you really want to tell, whether it's a family thing or a work thing, whether it's a good thing or whether it's a bad thing? You've got thousands of people listening, and you're a prosecuting attorney from Dakota County. What What would you say, or what will you say?
Well, Wayne, I've told you over and over, I really don't like talking about myself. But since you ask, I will remain silent. I'll not plead the fifth. As far as relating to the work I do, I enjoy being county attorney and assistant county attorney, and those are a career that I've sought out because I do feel like I make a difference, and that it does make a difference in our community, and the involvement I have, I think, can help shape people's lives. Sometimes I think for the better. I like to think the office that I hold is there to protect people and get them back on track and hold them accountable for their past deeds, but also make clear that there is a way forward and that society needs to be open and accepting that and bringing people back in and making sure that they can have a productive life.
Did you go to William Mitchell?
Well, it's now called Hamlin Mitchell now.
Yeah.
I went to Cornell College for my undergraduate, and then I was at William Mitchell or Hamlin Mitchell.
Well, you were and on then, and Summit then, Avenue, right?
Yeah. And then I was at the University of Arkansas
for
my LLM.
Why don't I remember that? Why did you go down there?
I don't know if I ever told you that.
why would you go to Arkansas?
I had an advanced law degree there. I thought I'd be teaching law.
Oh.
Or going into the corporate world.
I'll bet you would have been a good professor.
I think so.
I think you would.
Like teaching.
Because you can be dead serious and no messing around. You can be very outgoing and pleasant, which is the way I know you.
I try to be pleasant all the time.
You know, I've never watched you in The Well. Is that the proper...
When you're in the courtroom.
Yeah. I never saw you in a case, and there are a lot of lawyers that I've seen in prosecuting attorneys and defense lawyers, and some of them are really interesting, and some are pretty dull. I think probably most of them are dull.
Yeah, I try not to be dull because I know jurors expect some entertainment, but I try to always treat people with respect, and you know, I'm usually having a good day, Wayne. I don't usually have bad days.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful world out there, and you know.
Tell me what it's like to get when the judge has to make a decision of overruled or sustained. Tell me what those two things mean.
Well, if there's an objection of something I'm asking, the judge can either overrule the objection, meaning I can go forward with my questioning and the witness can answer it, or sustain the objection, which means I move on to the next question.
And it's confusing because overruled sounds like a no.
Yeah, it does. And that's what I usually tell witnesses when you're prepping your witnesses. Usually tell them, if you hear the word objection, stop talking, wait for the judge. The judge will make a ruling. And then I'll tell you can answer or not answer, or I'll move on to a new question.
Okay. And what it's saying is overruled means overruling the objection by your opponent.
Right.
And sustains means that he accepts his denying what was just said or whatever.
Yep.
Okay. And it just, the words sustained and overruled, and they're almost like opposites, but it's 10 before 11 on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Don't forget that the 15 with the authors coming up with Terry Knight. You don't want to miss this one. So in regards to the longest case you ever had, what would that have been? You never get involved in civil matters, right?
No, I would be involved in civil matters as well, and both when I was in Isani County, here in Rice County, and now in Dakota.
Why?
Smaller counties, you have to be a jack of all trades.
Well,
you have to both do the criminal side, and in Minnesota we have county attorneys. We don't have district attorneys. So a county attorney's office does both the civil and the criminal side of the law for the county. And in this setting of a county attorney in Minnesota, you prosecute for the state of Minnesota, not for Rice County. You're prosecuting for the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, so you aren't involved in a will, for example.
Only if it involved the county in some way. Sometimes the county will be a beneficiary of it or one of its organizations like the Historical Society. We have been involved in those types of cases.
But those aren't many that you get involved in, are they?
Not on a regular basis.
Can you tell me what was the longest civil trial held in Rice County?
I do not know that. I know Judge McManus had a civil case that was the largest payout where he was bringing a case for a victim of a auto accident or something. But I'm not certain as to what the longest civil was. I can tell you the longest running civil cases are usually child support cases in divorce decrees because people will litigate those until there's nothing left to litigate.
I'll tell you what.
And those can go on for years simply because, obviously, if you have children involved in a marriage, those issues go on, you know, visitation, child support, should it be adjusted, should it not be adjusted. And the county is involved in the child support side. They collect all the child support for people who are entitled to it.
I remember I hired a guy to be a news guy, and he was from Ohio. And the first time I got a letter from the courts of one county in whatever it was in Ohio, I'm reading it, and the bottom line is I'm saying, well, that's a pain in the... I had to make out a check, a percentage of his pay, I had to make out to a court in Ohio and send them a check. So actually, when it came to doing payroll, you had to do two for one.
Fortunately, we don't use checks anymore, and it's all automated.
Okay.
Which has made it easier, actually, to collect child support.
Yeah, I suppose. You know, you can get a traffic ticket, and all of a sudden...
You can pay online.
Yeah. What I mean is, yes, but you also will know that you haven't paid your child support.
Oh, yeah.
Just because you got a ticket.
You can have your license.
Hey, what do you think of this? I heard... A friend of mine's nephew became a state trooper in Wisconsin, and he said that if you're under nine, that's fine. If you're over nine, you're mine. Is that pretty close? Or should we
you
not?
Should you always can. Travel the speed limit, Wayne, and be very cautious. Don't be texting. Pay attention when you're driving. That's my advice.
Okay, I'm going to take a final break, all right? And then we'll be back with our guest here on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KIM. We are definitely a friend you can count on.
Hi, I'm Kathy Olson. If you've ever been to Millstream Commons, I'm guessing you've seen the jukebox, popcorn machine, cafe tables, and cozy booths that set the stage for fun in the room we call the Connection. This gathering place provides a spot for grandkids to dance, twist and sing, a place for friends and families to enjoy a carry-out pizza, and the perfect setting for relaxing chats, rousing card games, and interesting speakers. Whether it's a planned event or an impromptu gathering, the Connection lives up to its name. After all, it's the relationships we have and the connections we make with others that allows us to live, laugh, and learn.
Thanksgiving's just around the corner, and the Northfield Knights of Columbus want to make sure your holiday is heavy on the gravy, but light on the pocketbook. Turkey Bingo is back at St. Dominic's Church. Come in for a night of fun with family and friends, and try to win yourself a turkey, or a chicken, or a pork pack, or a beef pack. Turkey Bingo is Friday, with free games starting at 6:30 and bingo at 7. Food and beverages will be available throughout the evening. Get in the spirit of Thanksgiving. Play Turkey Bingo at St. Dominic's Church in Northfield.
That sounds like a lot of fun. It is 5 minutes before 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. We know that our guest this morning grew up in Lakeville, Minnesota, graduated from Lakeville High School. We know that he went to various universities, got his law degree, and even studied in Arkansas, where they have a couple of attorneys that married each other and became quite prominent in Arkansas.
Yes.
And anyhow, when you and I wanted to get together with you and see what it was like from the Rice County attorney to being an assistant prosecuting attorney in Dakota County. And I think I asked you that back in August, and we kept having you, hey, man, I got a case. I can't be in. And you gave me this date, November 12th, and I'm going, that's really far ahead, but okay. And I look at that every once in a while, and I'd say, oh, yeah, that's right. It was this morning coming in when I figured it out.
Well, I think I had to cancel twice, though, because of trials that I was in.
Yeah.
So,
but
and then I think one, I was in Tanzania for a couple of weeks that you wanted me, and I was like, I can't do that.
Okay, but...
So I picked the one date I knew I would be off.
Well, I'd come back again, and let's talk about Tanzania. But did you ever serve time in the military?
I did not. I have a brother that served in the Navy and is now a disabled vet, and I have an uncle that served in both the Marines and the Air Force, and then I have a couple cousins that served, as well as three nephews that have done military service.
So what year did you graduate? High school?
1981.
Okay, so there was no... war going on at that time.
No. Okay. I was in that PAX, Reagan
yeah.
era.
But did you ever have a desire to be in the military?
Not really. Like you said, the Vietnam War ended when I was in, you know, middle school, high school. Middle school, I think, 75 it ended?
Well,
70, yeah.
Officially, it was before that, but... the end was
yeah.
75.
So there wasn't really any military operations going on. Jimmy Carter was president. There's some oil crisis and things like that. But the military aspect of the U.S., I think, had been pretty much diminished for any desire to go out and police the world. And then when Reagan was in office, there wasn't much for military activity either. I think there was an invasion of Grenada to... get some American medical students out or something. But other than that, it was not a busy military time, or anybody really that I knew went into the military.
And I got drafted, and fortunately for me...
Yeah, they didn't have the draft when I was...
Yeah, and I was going to say, I got drafted, and fortunately I was rejected. You didn't get drafted because that was over with. So,
right.
So we have a professional army now. And they are trying to, they advertise to get people to join. And there are people that in my head go, wow, that actually say, yeah, I want to go do that.
Well, after watching Stripes, a lot of people wanted to enlist. But
I thank them. And I'm
yes, I want to thank all my relatives that have served and all servicemen out there that help keep us safe. And women, service people.
Women in your family that has served?
My grandmother, I believe, was in the reserves, a WAX or whatever, back in World War II.
Oh, okay. They had the WAX and the waves, and I've had a lady that was a pilot trainer in the Second World War. She just passed away, I think, a year ago. Superwoman.
Yeah. Well, I think almost every woman that was in World War II, because they were... not only, you know, keeping the home fires burning, but working in our industries, producing military armaments for the people that were serving overseas.
Well, we have to give a station identification, and then we go with 15 with the author. Do you want to have the honor, see if you know how to do one?
Station identification.
Yeah.
You're listening to Kim Radio, AM 1080, The One, and I'm supposed to add... something about the FM station, right?
Well, actually, you have to give the city of license.
Oh.
And the call letters.
KYMN.
1080 AM.
1080 AM.
95.1.
FM.
The One.
Here in Northfield, Minnesota.
You got it. Thank you very much. It's 11 o'clock. Thanks for listening, folks, and I'll be in again tomorrow morning.
It's time for 15 with the Author, hosted by Terry Knight. Join Terry as she opens the cover on a different book each week and talks with the author about their book, their life, and their message. Take a deeper look under the cover with Terry.
Get right to it. I am speaking with Stephanie Warren Drimmer, and the world, of course, is full of mind-blowing marvels, and National Geographic Kids has come out with a new book series that uncovers our planet's most peculiar phenomena, puzzles from the past, eye-opening inventions, astonishing animals, and so much more. Drimmer is the author of Ultimate Secrets Revealed, a closer look at the weirdest, wildest facts on Earth. Stephanie, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
First off, let's talk about who you are, your expertise, and how you came to write for National Geographic Kids.
Oh, sure. Well, I'm a science journalist by training, and when I was in graduate school, I got the chance to intern at some children's magazines and just totally fell in love with writing for kids. So I've been doing that for almost 8 years now, and I'm lucky enough to work with National Geographic Kids a lot, and this is our most recent book.
And this is, from the information I have, this is a new series?
Yes, this is the first book, and the idea behind it is that everybody loves the fun.